I'll just give some background, and if others, including Sworna's colleague, joins us, then we can catch them up if there's anything important out of that.
Sounds good. Yeah, the recording is going now.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody to our biweekly meeting of the Diversity, Civility, and Inclusion Working Group. As always, all are welcome here. Everybody attending a Hyperledger meeting is required to abide by the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the,
the antitrust policy.
I was unmuting. Yeah, thank you.
Antitrust policy. I always forget that one with this meeting. So what we typically do with these meetings is that we work a lot in this community off of the Hyperledger Wiki. So I'm just copying that link into the chat, and that brings us to our meeting minutes. But the higher level page for that is the working groups area, which you can also see in the page tree on the left side of the wiki, and that sort of organizes everything that we work on. And so the kind of things that we'll also be talking about today are some of the other activities that we've had ongoing in the past. One of them is a community survey where we try to get an understanding of what the current state of the community is right now, both in terms of its demographics and attitudes about the health of the community. In earlier years, Tracy had put together a community survey that was a little bit more focused on developer statistics, so things like computer languages. And what we worked on this year was modifying that to help address this DCI working group's objectives. Back in March, we continued the theme that we had started off. So this particular group, just for your background, Sworna, kicked off officially sometime in the fall of 2019, but we had been working unofficially as an uncharted working group for about a year or so before that. And one of our first objectives, out of all the possible ways that we could help address diversity, civility, and inclusivity, was to focus on gender equality. And so we had initiatives for that pretty focused around the Global Forum event, which is our main face-to-face conference for Hyperledger in March. And so we had a diversity event that was sponsored by Accenture and organized by Lisa Worley, who's also on the call. And we had some other talks that weren't necessarily gender focused, but were DCI focused, that were led by Tracy and Swetha, who is not on the call, but Tracy is. And so those things are captured in different links around there. And one of the things that led to us reaching out to you, Sworna, was to talk about, well, what do we want to do for the rest of the year? We had a number of one-off activities like this community survey that we had envisioned when we got chartered. And now we're looking at having a more regular cadence to what we do so that we could give people who want to contribute a little bit more predictable schedule about how they engage and what kind of things are available to be worked on. And we took a look at different calendars as a start for that. And so things like Pride Month coming up in June, we started getting our thinking together about what we can be doing for that. We went out to Hyperledger, also has a marketing committee that incorporates a lot of the businesses that are involved in Hyperledger, and started that conversation with them to get their engagement in that. Part of the thinking is that they have their own recruitment activities for that month, and if we can incorporate Hyperledger messaging into that, that really helps us get out our diversity message as well. And we wanted to do that for other events through the year too, and a couple of those are listed on there, like Hispanic Heritage Month later in the year. And then we wanted to get an idea what else is happening in the Linux Foundation umbrella of projects, and then of course anything else out in the open source world. And so David went off looking, and he found you. And so we're excited to hear what what you work on in your project, and maybe just getting a little bit of background about that project too. I guess I didn't actually give you background on the Hyperledger project, so if that's of interest, we can do that. Otherwise, we can just set that aside and kind of get to the main event.
Sure. I think I have worked with a few folks in the Hyperledger team, at least in the from the Linux Foundation side. I'm slightly familiar with it, but yeah, would love any kind of context or maybe further clarification as we go forward in the discussion. Just to give a little bit of intro from my side, I work on the Cloud Foundry Foundation. So it's a Cloud Foundry is one of the projects under Linux Foundation umbrella, and Cloud Foundry has been, the project has been around for over 10 years, but the foundation has been around for 5 years under Linux Foundation. So we've had a fairly stable and mature technology and also the community thereby. I work as a community manager here. So I have, I put kind of several hats on in terms of how I work with the community. One is working with the people programs and working with the technology as in the engineers and the project teams that work on various aspects of the platform itself. And part of that, part of the reason why the job description has both technology and the people aspects of the community and the platform is because as a community manager, I kind of am responsible for keeping a pulse on the ground, like keeping an ear to the ground and understanding how the community feels about different aspects in the technology. For example, taking a look at the brand new folks that are trying to join the community. How inclusive is it, or how inclusive is our documentation? How welcoming is our documentation? Because for brand new folks, looking at most times in our in the open source communities, folks start with either Git repositories or just the documentation side to understand what a project is all about. Is the documentation written in such a way that it helps folks understand what the basic concepts are? Because most times we cannot assume prior knowledge of any of these concepts that are relevant or that are related to our technology. So does our documentation have all those kind of references, even if we cannot include every single concept into the into our documentation? At least does it have references to the right technologies and right terminologies so that it makes it more usable and useful for folks that are beginning to learn about Cloud Foundry? Are the projects itself accessible in the sense that if someone wants to get started either learning or consuming or contributing to a specific project within Cloud Foundry, how welcoming are they? Are there Git issues tagged as first, good first issue labeled so that it just makes it easier for folks to take a look at that and maybe start contributing, like start getting their toes wet by contributing to those kind of issues or by taking a look at fixing those issues. Is the code base readable? When folks look at it, it's not just the front end of the product or project that has to be accessible, but also the back end, as in, is the code readable by a brand new person? Because the project has been around for 10 plus years. It has evolved significantly. It has changed languages that it uses. It changed significant. The architecture has also changed several times over the course of these 10 years. So have we maintained that kind of readability in the code base so that when someone new comes in and starts contributing to the project, how easily can they understand it or go through it themselves, as opposed to needing someone else to walk them through the code and kind of helping them understand the inside story or the inside view of the code? Like, is it easy for anyone to just take the code and read it and understand what that particular piece of code or what that particular module is supposed to do? So thinking about it from all different, from various different aspects, and not just diversity or inclusivity in terms of gender or in terms of the sexual orientation or the regional differences and all these kind of things. I'll pause there. I I know I kind of started off with an intro and kind of went off on to the core topic, but is this going in the right direction, or is this something that you wanted to kind of talk about, or
is this sounds super helpful. Do you mind if I ask a question, or would you rather?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious. I mean, you talked about a number of things that you look for to make sure that the community remains inclusive over time, such as making sure that the documentation is there or bugs are tagged correctly. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is more around ownership. If those things aren't the case, what if the documentation isn't great, or what if, you know, something is not as you think it should be? Like, who owns making sure that that is fixed and updated?
Most times it ends up being the foundation's responsibility, because the engineering teams are so deeply buried in the daily aspects and just making sure that the project is up and running, or the project does not fall apart when there are upgrades or updates that needs to happen. So either the project leads have to pay attention to that, and if the project leads are not paying attention, or if they are also being stretched too thin, then we as a foundation team kind of step in and ask them just the kind of questions that indirectly or that subtly get the point across that it is not understandable by us, or it is not very clear when we read, so can we make this better? And I also play it slightly differently, because coming from the foundation all the time, or making it a foundation's responsibility, is also hard, because we cannot keep track of all the different projects that are under the Cloud Foundry Foundation. So I also reach out to the end users, and I don't really make it their responsibility, but I also kind of help them get the motivation to read the documentation, or just to take a look and see if they can provide any feedback for the engineering team, because it helps us in two ways. First of all, it doesn't make it sole responsibility of the foundation in ensuring that, and also it helps additional eyes on the same documentation or the same doc site, for example. And just the way I would read a document, or the way I would read a specific piece of information, is significantly different from how an operator would read it, or how a developer would read it, or how a brand new developer versus a seasoned developer in Cloud Foundry community would read it. So I just usually ping a bunch of different folks and make sure that they're also taking a look at it and providing the feedback to the project teams. It is a lot of work, and pretty much why I usually call myself the cat herder, because I have to reach out to all these different people. But it helps, because I'm not the only one telling the project teams that they need to take a different look, or they need to make the documentation better.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. So if I heard you correctly, you don't necessarily do all the work of making those changes, but you do have kind of an ownership over keeping an eye on if those things are in place or not. And if they're not, you kind of, like you say, cat herd to get it done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. No, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. I also see Caitlin has joined. Sorry.
Yeah. Welcome, Caitlin.
Thank you.
And that's really what I wanted out of this was some discussion. I'm pretty ignorant of the Cloud Foundry project generally. I think it's probably hard to set up beforehand. Here's a strict list of things that we should talk about for DCI, and so sort of discovering as we talk, I think, is helpful. We also have Hart Montgomery on the phone. Hart, Tracy, and myself are all on the technical steering committee, so we also represent some of that dual view of things that you alluded to between technical and community, or strictly technical and community. Maybe what would be helpful too, at least to me, is to think about this a little bit organizationally. So Hyperledger has about a dozen projects underneath its umbrella, and we're organized with maintainers that are primarily company affiliated that align between or align along with those individual projects. And then we have this steering committee that is the main governance structure, besides the governing board, but really the TSC is the main governance structure. And then we also have a number of working groups, of which this DCI working group is one, and also probably the least traditionally technically oriented. So when it comes to DCI themed activities at Hyperledger, the work is kind of spread out. So it's on the initiative of the individual projects and maintainers. The TSC, the steering committee, has some responsibility, but as far as individuals who have sort of chartered themselves to go out and do that as a priority, it's this group here, and then also our, it's not really technically a foundation at Hyperledger, but Hyperledger employs a few community architects, and they do some of what you were talking about as far as, hey, is can I point a new contributor to a bug that's tagged as a good first issue? Are there obstacles in the documentation or otherwise when somebody wants to get involved? So I'm curious, organizationally at the Cloud Foundry, do you have a similar structure, or is it very different?
I think it's a similar structure as well. Cloud Foundry as a technology is an entire platform, and there are individual modules which, even though pretty much everyone in the community contributes to it, it's probably driven by one particular organization or two organizations at the maximum, because it is in the vested interest of their business success or their commercial success that they would like to see that project succeed within Cloud Foundry. So I think the model or the structure is similar. And we have a few working groups. We used to have a few more or a lot more special interest groups or working groups in the past, because it just made sense at that point of time. And as we kind of evolved towards this more stable kind of a life cycle or a more mature point in the life cycle, it just did not make sense for us to have a whole lot of working groups or special interest groups. So for now, we only have two special interest groups focused on integrations or the kind of discussions between Cloud Foundry and Cloud Foundry using Kubernetes as the underlying infrastructure, because there's just various different parts that it affects that we had to form a special interest group to make sure that all the topics or all the different parts that are going to get impacted or that have to think about being restructured have to be in that discussion. And then there's another group for just the operators, because the operators felt like they needed a common place to discuss all the issues or all the best practices that they would like to share amongst themselves. We have a marketing working group. I think that's the only working group that at least I am familiar with, which Caitlin runs. And she has always been leading the working group discussions for the marketing members in our community. In the past, we had special interest groups for the financial sector, or we considered one for the aviation industry, because it just made sense for them to come together as a vertical to discuss how to leverage Cloud Foundry and how to make sure that the common aspects that is consistently used across the industry can be developed. And then as they kind of evolved into a more focused or more specific discussions about how they could use that specific project or that specific module for their business success, it just didn't make sense to collaborate at that point of time. So yeah, I think the structure is similar. I've been here for about 2.5 years, so I'm not sure if we ever had a specific DCI kind of a group or a working group, but Caitlin, are you familiar with that? Or is it just that we have it incorporated into pretty much everything that we do?
Okay. Yeah, we've never had an actual DCI working group at the foundation, although I have participated in some broader DCI working groups, like within just the Linux Foundation generally. And I think a few years ago, there was a DCI working group that came out of an open source summit, although I have to say, I'm not sure what happened to that. But just within the foundation itself, part of our mission is to include inclusive language just across all of our materials and just across our like attitude in general. So we haven't had a specific working group around it. I think we see that as it can come off as pigeonholing it a little bit, whereas we try to just execute on it every day in everything we do. So that's part of the reason that we never created a DCI working group.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like, trying to just keep listening.
Lindsay, I'm sorry,
nice
it's hard to
have
to hear
you joining us. Yeah, we couldn't quite pick that up.
Hey guys, I'm definitely excited to join. Sorry, I missed the first half. I had a conflict, but I'm super excited to jump into the conversation. Yeah, sorry for any disruption.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for joining. I was going to add to the pigeonholing comment. I mean, I think that's helpful to hear your experience, and I guess that is, I mean, just speaking for me, I mean, that's kind of been our experience here with the DCI group, kind of as it incorporated. It feels like it's kind of off on the side, and it's hard to bring other people into the conversation, and there have been some people who do show up, but there's, you know, how it feels like that's separate from the rest of the community, right? For the people who don't show up, like, it's hard to get those.
So some of the ways that we have, some of the ways that we have done it is when we host an annual summit, we have our cloud foundry summits once in North America and one in Europe every year. And for that, back, I think more than 5 or 6 years ago, the community used to host it. And then after the foundation came into existence, we started hosting the event. But for the program committee, we usually have the community nominate folks within the community, like nominate themselves or others as program co-chairs. And if we have more than two nominations for each track, then we also open up for elections. And then we let the community vote on whom they would like to see as the co-chairs. And the typical advice that we generally give to the, or the guidance, one of the guidelines that we also give the co-chairs is to make sure that the speakers that they're selecting, the topics that they're selecting are widely represented in the sense that they have beginner and experienced topics, like deep dive topics. They have speakers that are broadly represented as well, not just from a gender perspective, but also location or region perspective, and also employer perspective. We don't want to have one employer highly represented than, or more represented than others. We also make sure that we have enough number of projects that are represented within those talks as well. So we just make sure that our program or our agenda, the schedule for our events is also kind of well thought through. Sometimes we don't get submissions from various people that we would like to see submissions from. And in that situation, we ask the co-chairs to have that freedom, or to feel free to reach out to the community, or to reach out to the specific individuals, or reach out to the community for specific topics if they feel like something has not been represented or there is a gap in a specific aspect.
Yeah, and just to add on to what Swarna said, I think, you know, part of our strategy is that actions really speak louder than words. And I think the most effective and insidious way to perpetuate diversity is to show rather than tell. So we make sure that we feature a variety of industry individuals at all of our events who represent all genders, races, ages, sexual orientations, et cetera, speaking on a panoply of topics, not focused exclusively on the subject of diversity, and also without being referred to as an expert qualified by their diverse modifier. So for example, like a female executive or something along those lines, we just try to normalize it, because normalizing what can be perceived as otherness negates its nature. And I think what we try to do in terms of specifically events, we provide non-binary restrooms. We try to feature non-male and ideally non-white MCs and cast the net wider to attract you know, non-white, non-male speakers and attendees at our summits. So there is a lot to be said for just being as visible as possible when it comes to showcasing diversity, and also to ask for it, because to Torna's point, you know, a lot of times when we are working with our members and they offer us a speaker, and you know, it's frankly a you know, just another white guy, will say like, hey, we know this person is an expert on this topic. Like, is there someone else within your organization who is going to be representative of an underrepresented minority in technology? And most of the time, the answer is yes. That's just not the person that they gave us first. So you really do have to ask for it a lot of the time. But I think that the more you ask for it, the more it makes other people realize that that's something that they should be doing to begin with.
I agree. Yeah, agree really more. Yeah. Almost every single time we ask for a speaker, we get the first suggestion or the first person that they point us to is never the person that we are looking for. And sometimes I even have those really tough conversations with those individuals where I tell them that, hey, I understand that this is an executive at your organization or a really high level person in your team, but we are also looking for maybe a beginner who is just starting off in this project, who was extremely critical in contributing to this project, but who is not in the limelight. It could be another white male for all I care, but is that individual generally in the spotlight? Is that individual generally invited to being a keynote speaker? If it's not, then maybe I don't mind considering that individual, because I would like to see new faces as well. I don't want to see the same set of faces or the same known names on our keynote stage or on our event stages. And we also, to Caitlin's point about actions speak louder than words, we once went to, I call it a radical extreme, but we had two middle-aged straight white men from our community get up on the speakers on the keynote stage and talk about inclusivity and how we can make our community more open and more inclusive. Generally, these topics are covered by women and people from underrepresented communities. And it's as soon as a woman or a person from an underrepresented minority group stands up on the stage and starts talking about a diversity or an inclusivity kind of topic, half of the people tune out because it's just yet another diversity topic by a woman or a non-binary person. But when the same message is delivered by a white man or someone that looks and talks exactly like us, the impact of that message is significantly different. And thankfully, one of those speakers also had an apprentice that worked on their team who did a PhD research or thesis on this exact topic as to how people receive feedback or how people receive these messages and how is it or when is it more impactful and how is it more impactful to deliver these kind of messages. So it's phenomenal to see how reactions change or how we decipher or translate the message when based on the person that's delivering it. So it was super successful. We were really nervous and we were almost ready to face a ton of backlash, but our community received it really well. And there was nothing but positive outcomes after that. Yeah.
That is really good to hear. And also a little bit ironic because one of the guest speakers that we started to line up for one of our next events has that same message. It's a gentleman from the same company that I'm from, and he talks about the importance of people who are like him, white male, sort of in the majority, coming in and speaking and how that can be effective. A couple other things that you said resonated with me too. Just as far as community development, a little bit back from diversity itself, but we had a wide variety of working groups at Hyperledger, and I think we're roughly the same age of an organization. Well, maybe not. I think you said that Cloud Foundry has been around for about a decade, but as a foundation, about 5 years.
Right.
And then I think Hyperledger has been around only as a open source organization for about 4 years. Does that sound right, other people?
Yeah, approximately.
Yeah. But anyway, so I guess as that portion of the age aligns, we had a variety of working groups, and over the last year we've seen a lot of those fall off because some of the initial motivations of those have either been resolved or there's just not as much energy for those. And so we're a little bit of an outlier in having created a new working group as there's been contraction in that space. And the other thing that, that I was hearing there was that it sounds like as a foundation staff, there's a lot of onus on you guys to coach the community. How big is your staff for the foundation?
I think there are five of us now.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. We're pretty small.
Okay. That sounds like a lot of burden on five pairs of shoulders there.
Well, I'll also say that because we've been around for 5 years and because I've been at the foundation for a little over 4 years now, and diversity and inclusivity is something that's always been very important to me, in my personal and professional life. And so when I joined the foundation, that was something I really brought with me, even though it already for sure existed at the foundation. But I think I helped like codify it at the foundation, and create sort of like a program around it. And in doing that, we have been now working with our community for over 4 years on, you know, expanding their minds and making sure that they are being inclusive. And, you know, even our code of conduct, has that built into it. So I think at this point, our community is pretty well-trained. And if they've been to our events, which most of them have, they, you know, we've seen the attendance at our diversity luncheons grow exponentially over the last 4 years, as the topics expand, as attendance grows and the conversations get livelier and more engaged. It's something that I think every single person in the Cloud Foundry community is very well aware of. And so at this point, I don't want to say our work is done. It's certainly never done, but we really have set that ball rolling. And I would say that we get a lot of, at this point, there's a feedback loop when it comes to diversity and inclusivity within the Cloud Foundry community. It's not just a one-way street. So that's been really amazing to see. And also, of course, like takes the burden off of our shoulders as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't heard about these diversity luncheons. That's a new concept for me. Could you tell me more about those?
Sure. So the diversity luncheons, we do at every single one of our Cloud Foundry summits. And as Sorna mentioned, there are two a year, typically in North America and Europe, although this year it will be virtual in June. And so we have on one day of the event, typically about a two-hour luncheon. Anyone who wants to come can come. There's a buffet. So it is very casual. It's a lot of like round tables. And there's a stage set up. Part of the way that the room is designed in itself is about being inclusive and incorporating everyone into the conversation. So it is like a very like Q&A formatted space. And then in terms of the content topics, we have it's really run the gamut. Like I think at the beginning when we started doing the diversity luncheons, it was largely around the gender conversation, which is an incredibly important conversation to have. But over time, that has opened up to include a lot of other topics, including like digital accessibility, returning to the workplace after as a working mom after leaving for 20 years to raise your children, talking about sexual orientation and visibility, talking about mentorship and gendered feedback. So we've really expanded the range of topics, and I think that that's you know, expanded our attendance as well. And every single we also talked about ethics and like the ethics of technology in our last diversity luncheon at Summit in The Hague last year. So, you know, we've expanded the definition of diversity. And I think that that has even created or generated a broader conversation around diversity as well. Does that answer your question around diversity luncheons?
Yeah, that's very helpful.
And this is not to say that these are all solely the foundation's ideas, because we are only five or six of us, along with the two or three people from the events team that come help us from the Linux Foundation events team. It's also based on our community's feedback. The one thing that I have heard loud and clear ever since I joined the foundation is that the one thing the foundation, the Cloud Foundry Foundation, never does is to ignore the feedback. We always listen to what our community is saying and incorporate it right away. Even if it's more like an experimental phase, if the community wants it, we try and do it. And expanding the diversity luncheon topics from women in tech kind of topics, diversity of gender centered topics, to a much broader set of topics was also something that the community had given us. And Caitlin took that. It was a lot of work for Caitlin to put together that kind of a roster of topics and speakers, but it really worked really well, because now it was not a room full of women listening to their peers talking about the same topics or talking about the same issues that we're all familiar with, but it was more about thinking about ethics, talking about gendered feedback. And there were a lot of men in the room that learned a ton from the gendered feedback talk in particular. So it's more helpful for everybody across the board.
Yeah, I'd say we definitely pivoted to like a more action-oriented roster of content. The first couple of diversity luncheons we did, it was largely panels talking about like kind of the inequality in the workplace. And those were really, really important stories to hear. But I think we reached a point where then we wanted to talk about like, well, what's next? And, you know, you can't just be in an echo chamber of women talking about the issues that they face and not have people, you know, men and others like hear that story and make a change from it. So we really, we had to actively invite men into the room and say, you know what, this is called diversity luncheon. That doesn't mean that you're not a part of that conversation. So please join us and please engage. And it's been amazing to see the reactions. I mean, I've had so many people in the community come up to me, male people in the community come up to me and say, you know what, I never thought about this before. Thank you so much. It's totally changed the way that I approach my female colleagues. It's changed the way that I think about, you know, the pay gap, et cetera, et cetera. So that's been really amazing to see.
That's great. Yeah. And I'm also curious to hear, so definitely recruiting for these luncheons is one example of this, but what you found helpful to get the contributor community engaged in the topic itself, either directly or indirectly. You feel like your developers have a mindset towards DCI, or that they sort of go along with their day job without thinking of it? Or are they actively involved in trying to recruit into the community in a way that's cognizant of DCI?
We have a combination of those folks. For some of the folks, it comes naturally because even at their employers, even their employers' principles or core values are centered around inclusivity and diversity. And for some of them, it comes really hard because they're only learning it from the community and not really from their employer. All these folks that we were talking about until now, the folks that we recruited for either speakers or the diversity luncheon topics, they're all contributors from our community. We every time we have our conversations, we are talking to our contributors. There are some folks to whom it comes naturally. So when we locate, quote unquote, locate those folks in our community, we make sure that they're talking to the other folks and they're talking to their peers and it kind of expanding the same kind of culture or mindset. For example, when I joined the foundation, I asked one of our core folks, she's our PMC council chair at the moment. I was just asking her and I was just brainstorming a bunch of different things that we could do for contributors, like maybe a contributor heroes or a contributor spotlight of the month or something like that. And she immediately stopped me right there and she said, I know you're still near to our community and I know you're still near to being a community manager, but please don't ever call anyone a hero because everybody in our community is a hero. And that really made me pause and think about the language that we use when we're trying to promote others or the language that we are trying to use when we are trying to deliver a message across, because every word matters. If we call one person a hero, everyone else starts looking at them as a hero, and it just sets the balance completely off. There is no such thing as hero culture in open source communities, or there shouldn't be a hero culture in a community. And those are the kind of subtle things that I've heard from some of the folks. And doing, like taking advantage of little things, like setting up an auto response bot in our community Slack that throws up a helpful message that, hey, when you're addressing a group of people, please try to use other alternatives like you all or everyone or team or friends, kind of like giving suggestions as there are other ways to address a group of people than calling them, hey guys, or something like that. So just using those kind of subtleties to make it more inclusive, make our language more inclusive, make our initiatives more inclusive really helps. And contributors also see it because even though developers are busy writing code, they also notice these kind of things and they're like, oh, I have always been working behind the screens and someone noticed me and my work and they nominated me for a community award. Now I get to be on the keynote stage receiving the award from the executive director and it just makes me so happy and so recognized and appreciated. Because they would never call themselves a hero, but not calling them a hero and still giving them that kind of recognition that they really aspire for has been super helpful. I was just noticing yesterday in one of our SIG meetings yesterday that one of our community members from Germany was using the word folks when he was addressing everybody else on the call and just made me smile ear to ear because especially European culture and also parts of Asian culture coming from India, even for me, there were a lot of my friends back in India and I see a lot of European folks as well have a hard time moving on or moving to a different word or terminology to address a group of folks rather than instead of using guys. So just having those kind of subtle things being, I guess, sprinkled everywhere helps it a lot more than having a kind of a separate track for this and separating these initiatives or separating these kind of thinking approaches or mindsets from the core community's focus.
Yeah, that's a really interesting anecdote. So these community awards, what kind of topics are they given for?
We change up the categories almost every single time. We just say top contributor of the year or top the voice of Cloud Foundry community or sometimes we even say you name the award category. But the two awards that we consistently give from the foundation are the best end user story and also the foundation award. The foundation award, we get to choose whom we want to give the award to because as foundation members, we see the contributions and the work that some individuals do are a lot more effective than the community perceives it because they do a lot of more work in the background than the work in the front lines. So only those two are consistent. And for the others, we change it up. Or sometimes we even reach out to the community folks and say, hey, we're trying to come up with categories. What do you think we should have as categories? And people throw all kind of suggestions at us. And then we kind of come up with a consensus or come up with a few things that are more relevant because five people suggested that this might be a good category for us to have it. Again, it's the same as the nomination and the election process is the same as the program chairs for events. We ask the community to nominate folks, either themselves or their peers for a specific award or even more than one award. And then once we have those nominations, then we reopen we open up the voting process and we just choose the top two or three people based on how many of our folks come in. We did have once where we had to give the award for all four people that got nominated and voted in for that category because all four of them were equally critical and crucial for the community's success. And we were like, all right, we're giving awards for all four of them. Who cares? Because it's the community. We're just recognizing everybody. It's totally... the community awards are definitely something that we intentionally keep fluid for every event because based on where the community has been going and how the contributors have been coming up, like for something, for example, an award category that I could think of for our upcoming summit could be, again, something not exactly in this mind, but someone who has helped more beginners or more more contributors to join our community. So kind of like who made our community more inclusive and who made it more welcoming. There are a few folks that have been doing that without even stating or publicly saying that they have been doing that. Some of the projects have already started using those kind of aspects where they tag the GitHub issues diligently with the right tags. They make the documentation easy in their main GitHub repo, README. They have instructions or clear guidelines as to if you're interested in contributing, here are the things that you need to do and here are the caution kind of things that you need to keep in mind. So there are a few projects that already do that, and we want everybody else to do that too. So maybe one award could be something along those lines.
Yeah, that's great. That's definitely a tool that we should adopt over in Hyperledger. So one other big topic for us that I alluded to at the beginning is our ability to measure ourselves. So we had an idea that if we knew where we were weak, then we knew where to apply our time to try to remediate that. And our main way of doing that right now is still kind of experimental. So we have this community survey where we try to get all of the people who identify as contributors to the community to say whether or not they felt that the community was inclusive or not, give us examples if they wanted to in some free form text, and then also give us whatever demographic information they were comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Do you have a way of measuring yourselves in any objective way on diversity, civility, or inclusivity?
We use Biturgia at the moment. Chris Clark from our team, he works with the Biturgia folks to make sure that our dashboard is relevant. And we measure different things on that dashboard. One is the employers, to make sure that we have diversity of companies that are being represented by our contributor space. The second thing is the age of a contributor. How long have they been contributing? That gives us a good snapshot into knowing whether or not our community has brand new contributors or not, because I think it's easy for us to lose track of making our community more open for your brand new folks to join in. So that gives us a good glimpse of where we stand in terms of the age of the contributors, and also the location, like where are you based? Do we have majority of the contributors coming from the North American region as opposed to equally distributed, at least fairly equally distributed across the world? We also have, I don't think on Biturgia, at least I don't think we measure gender kind of aspects. We used to run community surveys in the past just for the exact reasons that you mentioned. But again, our community is around maybe 30,000 plus individuals, but we almost never used to get responses more than 300 or 350 responses. So it was not a good representative or a good sample to use that as a measure. So we stopped doing community surveys. And we now pay more attention to the Slack conversations and the Biturgia numbers where they self-represent or kind of automatically get tagged in because of their GitHub profiles and such. And also the GitHub issues to kind of see where we are. In terms of contributors, at least that's how we measure it. And in terms of the events, it's far easier for us to measure where we are at, because we can measure the demographics of the attendees in terms of the gender, in terms of location, in terms of their job titles and their age in the Cloud Foundry community, and also their overall industry experience. We also measure the diversity in the speakers. And I think for our most recent summit, or maybe for our European summit, the previous year, not the most recent one, we had about 25% of non-white male speakers, which was significantly higher than any of our events in the past. And also, I think that is something that even our events team said that it has been the highest for any event that they have helped host within Linux Foundation events. So that's a huge kind of accomplishment for us. And we measure those numbers in particular for the summits to make sure that we have a well-represented event, in-person event, that makes everyone feel welcome there.
That is really interesting to hear on all those points. We also had about a 10% response rate on our survey. So that's that's really interesting to hear that reflected.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you've had, just to confirm, you've had better experience not using surveys and getting that other way.
Webinar too.
Yeah, so if you can.
And try to join our program community and just talk about it briefly. But we're Tara's putting the initial.
Sorry, there.
Okay, I couldn't quite hear. Lindsay, were you asking a question there? Or was that just background?
Yes.
Sorry, just background noise.
Okay. Well, you're certainly welcome. We've got a few minutes left. I know I've been asking a lot of the questions. So Hart, Lindsay, I know our Accenture collaborators had to drop off for a conflict on the second half here. Hart's been working a lot on the steering committee on our governance. I'm not sure how much of that can relate directly with DCI. Certainly the inclusivity part of it plays in. We haven't had any sort of civility issues that we've had to address, fortunately. But if you've got any other questions that you wanted to throw in here.
Yeah, more, not necessarily a question, but, you know, just reiterating the importance of what we were talking about earlier about using intentional and precise language. I can remember attending a talk for Grace Hopper, it was 2 years ago, about when the language and the lexicon that we choose to use as diversity, equity, and inclusion professionals actually distracts from the end goal. And recently took a course on precise language. I'm not sure if it's open source, but if so, I'll pass it as a link to the group. It was extremely valuable to me at giving people sort of mental models and frameworks to think about as they communicate with different audiences, whether they're allies, whether they're people that identify with a certain demographic or have intersectional sort of perspectives and how we might navigate those things from a place of more skillful communication. So I'll pass those resources along if I have them, but I think that was a really, really good point to bring up.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could find that link. And similarly, if Lindsay or Caitlin, you've got a link to the Bitergy tool that you mentioned, that's not familiar to me.
Okay, yeah, I will give the Bitergy link.
Yeah, and I'd also add on to what Lindsay said. There is a tool called Textio that, I don't know if Sworna may have brought this up earlier on the call before I joined, but it's a really great tool for talking about inclusive language. Like you can put in, for example, like a job description and find out if your language is geared more towards men than women, and then you know, work on the language. They'll provide other suggestions for words to make sure that it's like an equal opportunity position and that you're not, you know, turning away women accidentally by using certain language. So that's a really good tool. And I'm sure there are other tools like that out there. It sounds like Lindsay did a pretty cool webinar with something related to that.
Yeah, no, I hadn't mentioned Textio, but I think I agree that it's a really useful tool. And I've had many of my friends and also folks in the DevRelent community or kind of community say that they have used it and they have been really successful in making sure that their recruitment or the job descriptions or just the text on their documentation site is more useful and does not use words like, we need a rock star. We need a developer rock star or a coding ninja or something like that in the hiring or job descriptions. And also does not use words. It helps us not use words like simply, or it's so easy to do it in the documentation, because that usually sounds a little more intimidating for beginners when they read that something is simple on a technical documentation site, because for beginners, nothing is simple. So Textio definitely helps with a lot of those kind of subtle language changes that we can make.
Great. Right. Well, that brings us right up to the end of our slot, and then I think this channel is used by the next group here at Hyperledger, so we will have to drop off shortly. But thanks so much. I know I learned a lot from this.
For sure.
I will be writing up notes and posting them to the wiki there. And you guys are always welcome to join us at our meetings. These happen biweekly, and they're available on our community calendar.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Swarna and Caitlin. Yeah, and I'll post the recording, Dan, and send it to the list so people can catch up if they weren't able to dial in.
Great. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thanks all.
Bye, everybody.